be Jesus and Mary. Saint Ignatius of Loyola was born in 1491 in Spain, and he had a conversion from being a worldly soldier to a soldier of Christ while recovering from an injury that he sustained in battle. During that time of convalescence, he, through prayer and the reading of the lives of the saints, the life of Christ, he discovered that treasure buried in a field, that pearl of great price. He abandoned everything to pursue it, studied for the priesthood, and while in Paris studying theology, he founded the Society of Jesus, also known as the Jesuits, that religious community whose sole purpose was to pursue and promote the greater glory of God and total obedience to the Pope. Saint Ignatius died in 1556 and left us a rich legacy, not only in the community that he founded, which did so much good for the church, but also in the spiritual writings he left us, primarily in his doctrine on the discernment of spirits. We know that in life we are prompted by many things to do certain things and omit others. And we have to discern where these promptings come from, because where they come from is where inevitably they will lead us. If they come from evil principles, they will lead us to do evil. If they come from good principles, they will lead us to do good. So an essential part of the spiritual life is learning to discern where our attractions, inclinations, where our leanings come from, whether from good or from evil, because that's where they will lead us. And today we'll look at a classic explanation of this discernment of spirits, just to get it right, because behind that word, discernment, today many errors actually are hiding. This word is used sometimes in a way to actually convey errors, whereas true discernment of spirit is meant to prevent us from committing these dangerous errors. So we'll look at one classical book of spiritual theology that, in a very succinct way, teaches us St. Ignatius's discernment of spirits. So, as we said, there are different spirits, we can say, that act upon us. We are moved to act or not to act by different principles, by different agents. In theory, these promptings may proceed from six different causes: from ourselves, from our good inclinations, or from our bad inclinations, from the virtues we've acquired, or from the vices we've acquired. From the world, insofar as through the senses, it exercises its influence over our interior faculties to draw them towards evil, the bad examples of the world, the anti-gospel of the world. These promptings can come also from good angels who inspire in us good thoughts, or from the bad angels, from demons who act upon our interior and exterior senses to prompt us to do evil and to omit the good that we ought to do. Lastly, these promptings can come from God, who alone can penetrate into the inmost recesses of the soul and who never urges us but to do what is good. This here is important to remember. God never urges us to do but what is good. God will never inspire us to commit a sin so that a seeming greater good can follow. So God would never inspire somebody to commit an act of adultery, for example, so that some apparent greater good might follow. That would be a deception. God never acts in contradiction of himself. And something doesn't cease to be a sin just because it seems it helps us to avoid another sin. So God, again, only inspires us to do what is good, only inspires us to do what is conformable to his law and what is consonant with our nature, what is going to perfect us, make us better, make us holier. God never lowers the standards for us. God never exempts us from a commandment because it's too difficult in any specific case. So in practice, it suffices to know whether these promptings arise from a good or from an evil principle. If they come from a good one, they'll lead us to do good. They'll lead us to do the works of God. They'll lead us to perform the works of holiness. If they come from an evil principle, they'll lead us to do the works of the flesh or of the devil. Now, being succinct, there are 14 such rules that St. Ignatius comes up with, so we'll have to kind of summarize together with our author and just teach them very succinctly. The first two rules refer to the different attitudes which the good and the evil spirits take with regard to sinners and to fervent souls. The first rule, to sinners who do not put any curb on their passions, the devil proposes pleasures and delights in order to hold them fast and immerse them deeper in vice. The good spirit, on the contrary, stirs their conscience with uneasiness and remorse in order to make them emerge from their sad plight. St. Ignatius came up with this rule from his personal experience of that convalescence in which he experienced precisely this. And it's this uneasiness of conscience and remorse which led him to abandon that life of sin that he was so tempted to go back to. The second rule, when it is question of souls that have sincerely returned to God, the devil excites in them sadness, torments of conscience, and creates all manners of difficulties in order to make them lose heart and halt their advance. We must expect this, realize this, and battle against it. The good spirit, on the contrary, inspires us with courage, energy, and good thoughts to make us grow in virtue and to overcome all obstacles on the path of virtue. By the fruits, then, will the tree be judged. Whatever hinders progress comes from the evil one. Whatever promotes it proceeds from God. The third rule deals with spiritual consolations. We can say that these proceed from God when, one, they arouse fervor in us, which is first a spark, then a flame, and lastly a glowing fire of divine love. Two, they proceed from God when they cause tears that are a true expression of interior compunction, our love for our Lord. Three, when they increase faith, hope, and charity, and bring a quiet and peace to the soul. Rules 4-9, very briefly. They have reference to spiritual desolation, which we will inevitably experience in the spiritual life. What do we do with this desolation when we feel discouragement? Should we abandon everything? Does it mean we're not doing something right? What are the rules? Desolation means either spiritual darkness or the inclination of the will towards the lower things, the things of earth, which render the soul sad, tepid, and sluggish. Just because we feel this doesn't mean we should go along with it. We have to discern these spirits. Where do they come from? In time of desolation, we must not, in spite of the suggestions of the evil spirit, we should not make any change whatsoever as to the good resolutions we have previously formed. But we must remain steadfast, abiding by our former decisions. Three, further, we must take advantage of desolation to grow in fervor, giving more time to prayer, examination of conscience, and exercises of penance. We must rely on divine help, which, though not felt, is nonetheless actually given us to aid our faculties in doing good. God is giving us his help, though sometimes it's not felt. It's there, and the evidence for it is the fact that we are doing good works, persevering in them. We must be patient and wait the return of consolation. We must say to ourselves that desolation may be a punishment for our lukewarmness, a trial, God wanting us to realize just what we are able to do when deprived of consolation, or a lesson, God wanting to show us that of ourselves we are incapable of securing consolations, and thus to cure us of our pride. The 11th rule returns to the subject of consolations to warn us that we need muster courage if we are to acquit ourselves well during the time of desolation, and to remind us we must humble ourselves at the sight of how little we can do when bereft of sensible comfort, and of how much we can do in spiritual distress if we lean upon God. And the last three of these rules, they explain and expose the deceptions employed by the devil in order to seduce us, to make us desist from doing what is good, and to lead us to do what is evil. St. Ignatius explains that the devil acts like a mischievous woman, weak in the face of resistance, but fiery and cruel to those who yield. Hence the duty of vigorous resistance. If we resist the devil, he proves himself a coward, whereas if we are afraid of him, he takes advantage of our cowardice and proves himself a cruel master to us. Hence the duty of vigorous resistance, trusting in God. Second, he acts like a seducer, imposing silence upon the victim he allures to evil. Hence, the best means of foiling him is to disclose all to our confessor and spiritual director. And lastly, he follows the tactics of a commander who attacks a garrison at its weakest point. Hence, it is important that we watch that weak point in our examinations of conscience. In this way, just briefly, we went through St. Ignatius' 14 rules for the discernment of spirits. It's a lot to take in all at once, but it's a lesson that's meant to be learned gradually as we progress in the spiritual life with the help of a confessor and of a good spiritual director. So as to always be on the lookout for deceptions from the evil one, from the world or from the flesh, which would take us away from God, make us stray from him. So hopefully these rules and the intercession of St. Ignatius will help us to always pursue and accomplish the greater glory of God, and with the help of Our Lady, even the greatest possible glory of God. Praised be Jesus and Mary.